Are you watching? Have you watched any of the Smart List show yet?
I haven't. My wife was started watching it, and I was like, "Oh, let me know how it is." And she said the first episode wasn't that good, so I haven't bothered yet.
I'm enjoying it, but I'm a deep apologist for anything, you know, Bateman Arnett related. So
right.
I'm enjoying
that.
It.
I just walked into the room for 1 second, and Sean Hayes was on the screen, and I was like,
right.
"Oh my God, he looks so old." I was
He
not
does.
prepared for him to look as old as he looks.
No, honestly, I think Arnett and Bateman would be better served having me as the third guy.
I don't disagree with you, but Sean Hayes stinks on the show, no question about it. But the dynamic of
right.
having a whipping boy kind of works for the show.
Yeah, no, I'd have no problem with Bateman or Arnett whipping me.
Verbally, you mean?
Sure.
Gamble on, fellas. Gamble on.
Welcome again to Gamble On, the weekly gambling podcast presented by USBets.com. I'm Eric Raskin, US Bets Managing Editor and Media Director, and I'm joined by my co-host, US Bets Senior Analyst Jeff Edelstein. This week on the show, Jeff will fight through the tears he's crying over Succession coming to an end. We'll cover the arrest of an 18-year-old hacker who stole sportsbook funds. We'll talk about what could prove to be the biggest story of the year in sports betting, although we have almost no details at this point. And we'll pray for the runner-runner of Celtics in Game 5 and Heat in Game 6 to turn around our bankroll fortunes.
Hey, we're also going to be welcoming Roto-Grinders head of motorsports, Stephen Young. You know him by his Twitter handle, StevieTPFL. He's coming to the podcast. It's a huge auto racing weekend this weekend. We got the Indianapolis 500, the Coca-Cola 600, the Des Moines 700. I'm being told Eric's laughter is indicating to me that that's
yes.
not right. Hold
Pretty
on.
Pretty sure that's not a thing.
Monaco Grand Prix, F1.
Okay.
All right, a lot of auto racing to cover. Stephen Young is going to be on the show to let us know all about it. But before we get to that, Eric, as always, plenty of news to discuss.
Here's your Gamble On News of the Week, an inside look at the biggest stories in the world of gambling.
We kick things off this week with a major new development in a major story we discussed on the podcast about 6 months ago. Listeners may recall the sportsbook hacking scandal, which saw someone gain access to people's online sports betting passwords and withdraw money from their accounts at several major sites, most extensively DraftKings. A reported 1,600 accounts were hacked, and a total of about $600,000 was taken. On Thursday, prosecutors announced an arrest in the case. 18-year-old Joseph Garrison of Madison, Wisconsin, was charged with 6 counts, including wire fraud, aggravated identity theft, and more. Our colleague Matt Rybaltowski went through the entire indictment and wrote a thorough accounting for Sports Handle, detailing how the hack was pulled off and how Garrison got caught with an undercover agent involved. If convicted, several of the counts hold maximum sentences of up to 5 years in prison, while 2 of the counts hold sentences of up to 20 years in prison. Assuming Garrison is guilty and is found guilty, how important, Jeff, is this arrest for the industry in terms of preventing future attacks like this? And do you get the sense this has served as an adequate wake-up call for the people on the tech side in online gambling?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this what he was doing was something called credential stuffing attacks, which I know nothing about. And the little that I've read up on it, it seems like it could have happened to like any site that's holding on to your cash, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, so I don't think this was a sports betting or, you know, sports gambling specific thing. It just, you know, he was able to do it to DraftKings. So the idea of that this could happen anywhere, I guess, is a little bit scary. I assume that the tech side of the industry is sitting up and taking notice.
Right.
You know, I mean, as I learned in the 1995 film Hackers, you know, I never actually saw that movie, so I shouldn't quote it. No, but I would assume that, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is like well beyond the scope of my expertise. I guess if this was a movie, though, this kid, you know, he's 18-year-old kid doing this stuff. I assume the CIA is already talking to him. They're giving him a job, like to hack into China or something.
Right. Yeah,
right.
That is usually how it goes in the movies. Yeah,
but I mean, why not? Right? I mean, the kid seems like some kind of, like, you know, tech genius. So let's put him to work.
Okay. Wait, so I'm confused which one is Hackers. I'm thinking of Sneakers with Robert Redford, which was
Sneakers
about hacking.
Hackers is with Angelina Jolie and I want to say Johnny Lee Miller, something like that.
Oh yeah, wasn't she married to Johnny Lee Miller at one point?
I think maybe.
Maybe they met on the set of Hackers. Let's just say they did.
Well, why not?
Why fact check ourselves?
Yeah. I mean, this is. It seems like this could have happened to any type of site that handles your money. Really, is that? I think, but I don't know.
Yeah,
you gotta get a job with the CIA. That's all. That's the bottom line.
We're just jumping straight to that. Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, in terms of the impact of this, pretty soon after this all went down, long before the arrest, most states and most sites began requiring two-factor authentication. I guess that's probably the lasting minor legacy of this incident. If that's all it is, I have to figure that's not going to be enough to prevent anything like this from ever happening again. But, you know, hopefully this sort of thing becomes more rare and increasingly minor and gets detected quickly before much money is taken the next time someone tries it. I think, you know, in terms of a deterrent, it's important how much jail time he gets and that he doesn't end up getting rewarded with a CIA job. If he gets let's say he gets 2 years, even though that seems to me like a perfectly fair punishment for what he did, I don't think it scares would-be hackers off. He gets 20 years and it gets publicized enough. I think that does scare people off, although it also feels a bit much to me for cyber theft. And especially as he's an 18-year-old kid, I would expect some degree of leniency. There were even some intercepted communications where Garrison was telling a co-conspirator that, quote, fraud is fun. I think they can make a decent defense that this was a kid fooling around and not like a serious attempt to steal people's money.
I think it was a serious attempt to steal people's money. But I also think, you know, you're 18. I mean, I got a son who's 14 years old.
Right.
If that frontal lobe's got a long way to go.
It does. We should note, though, that and Matt put this in his article, that Garrison is also facing charges in Wisconsin of calling in bomb threats and making terrorist threats to schools.
That I don't like.
Right. Yeah. So we could be looking at a legit troubled and dangerous person here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm tempted to go dark and like set a line on the length of the sentence or something. But as you said, we're talking about someone just a few years older than our own kids. Maybe we practice a little decorum and don't set that line.
There's a first time for everything. Let's do it.
Okay. Are you setting the line or am I setting it?
No, I'm saying there's a first time for decorum. I'm willing to not set the line here.
Okay.
I'm willing to take this one off the board.
Okay. I thought you were about to say I'm willing to take this one off air, which yes, when we're done recording, we'll set a line privately. One last quick related note. My instinct every time is to ignore messages telling me I should change my password.
Yes, of course.
I should probably work on overruling that instinct, but boy, can I not be troubled to update a password on anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I'm a little spoiled from how credit card companies whenever something happens, I just call the credit card company no problem. You know,
right.
I'm a little spoiled by that, I think.
Yeah, that's true. That if the pattern thus far has been if something goes wrong and you do get hacked,
it gets fixed.
You get your money back. So,
yeah, you get made whole.
That's right. All right, Jeff, before we get into our next news story, I'm curious. Are you a sunglasses guy? You strike me as someone cool enough to try the sunglasses indoors move, or maybe just hungover enough. Cool enough and hungover enough.
All right, well, I'm definitely that hungover, and I'd like to think I'm that cool, but in truth, I'm probably not that cool, though. But I'll tell you what, I'll give it a whirl next time I'm inside at a, event and see how it goes.
Okay. Well, for any of our listeners in the market for sunglasses, specifically suited for the outdoors, although I guess you can wear them inside if you want, you got to check out Shady Rays. They have premium polarized shades, customizable snow goggles, and much more. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that offers durable frames and extremely clear optics for your outdoor adventures.
And the one thing that I love about these guys is their protection program. You lose your sunglasses, you break your sunglasses, you sit on your sunglasses, you throw your sunglasses out the window. It doesn't matter. They're going to replace them. Whether it's been a day, a year, it doesn't matter. They're going to replace them for you for free. And there's also no risk. You buy them, you don't like them, 30-day money-back guarantee. You can return them, get a new pair, get your money back, whatever you like.
Not to mention, you'll feel as good as you look when you shop with Shady Rays, as to date they've donated over 20 million meals to fight hunger with Feeding America. It's good to shop with a company like that.
For sure. And exclusively for our listeners here, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the new year. Go to ShadyRays.com. Use code ROTOGRINDERS for 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself. These shades are rated 5 stars by over 200,000 people.
Our second story this week is a bit different in that there's almost no news to share here, but we have the tiniest tease of what could potentially turn out to be one of the biggest industry stories of the year. ESPN's David Purdom, a multi-time Gamble On guest, wrote a thorough piece on Monday that mostly looked back on the NFL's issues to this point with players and staff engaging in sports betting, sometimes in violation of the league's gambling policy. But Purdom had one sentence tucked in the second paragraph that was not just rehash and looking back. He wrote, quote, "In the wake of 5 players being suspended in April, the NFL is investigating a second wave of potential violations of its gambling policy," multiple sources told ESPN. That's it. That's all we have to go on. There is a second wave of potential violations being investigated. Not a singular violation like the Calvin Ridley incident, but a wave like what we saw recently with 4 Lions players and 1 Commanders player disciplined. For now, we know nothing, so we're left asking questions. Is a major name player involved this time? Did anyone bet in a way that could compromise games this time? Are we just going to learn about yet another ridiculous NFL rule, like players may not bet on NBA games that take place in the same time zone in which they reside, unless they bet while sitting in a Dunkin' Donuts and wearing pajamas, in which case it's permitted? Lots of questions here, some of them serious, some of them not. What's on your mind, Jeff, based on this one sentence that we have from Purdom?
All right, you showed your age there. It's Dunkin', not Dunkin' Donuts anymore. But
oh, really? Donuts isn't even part of the name?
No, just Dunkin'. All right, no, but for real, this one sentence, it's like, you know, it's like Chekhov's gun kind of thing, right? Like, holy crap, like, what the hell? Like, we're going to see this, you know, this is coming back at some point.
One would think.
And as a seasoned veteran of the news business, Eric, I'm kind of hoping that Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, and Josh Allen are, like, running a betting ring for NFL players helmed by, like, a cigar-chomping Aaron Rodgers, you know, for the content. That would make good content. As a fan and a bettor, I'm hoping it's like the 6th-string punter on the Tennessee Titans practice squad who bet $20 on a Memphis Showboats USFL game while standing on the boundary of the practice field and dunking. All that said, you know, Purdom clearly is, you know, he is plugged in.
Right.
He's plugged in. And if there's whispers of a second wave, there is a second wave. And I don't know. I think if people are talking about it right now and he's catching wind of it, that I feel like I'd say like the odds seem a little stronger that we're talking about some known quantities as far as like the players are concerned. I don't know. That's just a gut. You know, I have nothing to go with that on. Right. But I'll tell you, I mean, maybe I'll hold off on my best ball drafts for a week or two and see the shake out. You know, I don't want to get stuck with some Calvin Ridley shares last year. I don't need that to happen again this year.
That's an interesting angle that I hadn't thought about that. If you're doing early fantasy drafts, this could potentially impact all that.
Absolutely.
I guess that was probably the first thing you thought of.
Absolutely. The first thing I thought of.
If there is a whole nother wave of violations here, which, it seems there will be, It's time to point a finger at the NFL and the teams and say, bad job by you. You failed to educate your players properly on what the rules are, on what they can and cannot do. You know, 1 Calvin Ridley incident, that's on him, right? That's an outlier. But then you add 5 more players earlier this year, and then you add however many more we're about to add. You know, fool me twice. Shame on, won't get fooled again, however it goes. But
I think that's right.
Yeah. I'm sure the league sent everyone a copy of the rules, but they needed to do more than that, I guess. There should be a representative of the league coming to each team's facility at the start of the season and hosting a quick seminar or something, because clearly some of these players don't know what the rules are. I mean, right. You know, I'm sure some of them are being idiots, you know, they know the rules and they don't care and they assume they'll get away with placing a few bets or something. But I'd imagine a lot of them had no idea that betting from a team bus or whatever on non-NFL games is a violation. I bet a lot of them made the bets thinking it was fine. And so I think the league now needs to look at itself and say, we must have come up short on the communication end if this keeps happening.
I tend to agree with you. I think it would be a lot better if they just like made the rules a lot cleaner.
Right. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean,
The rules suck.
I feel like it's only, the rules are ridiculous. You know, yeah. they're muddled for no good reason. Like they're allowed to bet on NBA games, but they're not allowed to bet on NBA games if they're on a team bus. I mean, this is just.
Right.
This is asinine.
Or that the players can bet on an NBA game, but Miles Austin cannot because he's a employee, yeah. but not a player. Yeah.
He can't even play online roulette because right. that'll get you banned. I mean, this, you know, these rules are silly.
Yeah.
I often have to remind myself, I always think back to high school, right? And like picture yourself in your high school hallways, you know, classes are being changed and take a look around. And remember how you thought like so many of the people that you saw were just fucking idiots?
Uh-huh.
Well, these fucking idiots are now in charge of things.
Yes. Do you think you're the face that comes to mind for a lot of your high school classmates when they think of a fucking idiot?
No question. No okay. question. You know, but like the fact that, I mean, should I be in charge of anything? I mean, God, no. You know what
right.
I mean? But like,
right.
you know, they call me a senior analyst around here. I'm asking this.
Yes. You earned the title. You
Thank
wear
you.
It well.
Thank you.
I just want to double back to one thing. You mentioned the theoretical ring involving Mahomes and Hurts right. and Josh Allen.
Sure.
Mahomes' name really stands out. If it turns out anyone on the Chiefs was involved in any of this, you have to avoid the Super Bowl result, right?
Yeah, or it's his brother.
It probably is his brother. So do we get the Super Bowl result voided if it turns out it was Patrick Mahomes' brother?
Did we win or lose money in our fake bankroll as a result?
Oh, I'm not talking about voided from that perspective. Oh. I'm talking about that the Eagles didn't really lose the Super Bowl.
Oh, I see. Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I think it stands.
All right. Do you want to set an over-under on when I stop pretending that the Super Bowl result is kind of unofficial and it's unclear who won?
2050.
I'm taking the over. All right, let's close out the news section with something fun here. Let's talk about Sunday's upcoming series finale of Succession. And since we're a gambling industry podcast, we can go over some of the hypothetical odds included in your article that published today on US Bets, Jeff. And we can talk again about the New York Times writing about unregulated succession betting. But mostly we'll just talk about the finale and our feelings on the final season. And we'll tell each other to fuck off a few times. So spoiler warning here, if you're not caught up on Succession, but you intend to watch at some point, skip ahead a few minutes until you hear the bumper music that leads into the interview segment. For everyone who has stuck around, Jeff, I've got Waystar Gojo ending up in the hands of Bran Stark at 10-1 with a little sprinkle on Richard Splett at 25-1, plus a long shot bet on the guy in the members only jacket at 100-1. Decent value plays.
Those are absolutely terrible bets.
Yeah.
I can't recommend any of those. And I, you know, I'm willing. I like a good long shot, but mm-hmm. It would be that would be a stretch, I think, for Jesse Armstrong to introduce a guy in members only jacket in the last episode. Though who knows? You know, we'll leave it open.
10,000-1. Do you consider that one?
Yeah, for a buck.
Okay.
No, but I don't know. I heading into the, you know, I mean, it's called Succession. We've been waiting to see who's going to be in charge of the whole thing. I really think it's down to two people. I think it's down to. And as I say in the article that I wrote, it's like, is this a comedy or a tragedy?
Right, right.
If it's a tragedy, Kendall Roy assumes full control of this operation and loses everything in the process. If it's a comedy, like I predicted 2 years ago, Mike Seeley, who thinks it was his idea.
Right.
But Mike, or, you know, our colleague Mike Seeley also, you know, he's definitely been beating this drum that mm-hmm. cousin Greg somehow ends up in the CEO chair, and he's got outs this week to do it as I lay out. He's got outs because, you know, he danced with an old man and drank drinks that aren't normally
that weren't
drinks,
right?
That
yeah,
weren't drinks. And so he's got, like, it seems like Lucas Mattson likes him. Ewan, the grandfather, made a return last week to do a eulogy, and we got a big board meeting coming up. He's on the board. Mm-hmm. He could be a deciding vote. So Greg has outs, and they would be, you know. It feels like within the confines of the show that like it would be really saying something if the moron, basically the striving moron, got the top job, right?
Right.
But I don't know. It's fun to consider. Maybe there might be a head fake in that direction. But if I was betting for real, I'm betting on Kendall Roy assuming full control and like Michael Corleone-esque burning everything behind him.
Right. Yeah, that seems the chalk pick right now.
Yeah.
It's all about, you know, can you guess to what extent they're trying to misdirect and to what extent they're playing it straight. And then the big question that you asked that you just brought up is, you know, does Jesse Armstrong view his show as a Shakespearean tragedy, or does he view it as a Shakespearean comedy? Because if it's the latter, then Greg makes all the sense in the world. Like, Veep was purely satire and comedy, even if it unintentionally predicted many of the horrors of our reality. But it knew for sure that it was a comedy, and so it made sense to do a ridiculous ending and make a lovable nincompoop the president. But I said this in Slack, you know, the show has now left a lot of Greg breadcrumbs, and thus it won't be all that surprising. It seems like everyone is predicting it, and that makes me think Armstrong has been intentionally throwing us off track, and it won't be Greg. But you know, I've turned into Vizzini with the Iocane powder and all that, thinking right. overthinking it. Basically, I don't really have a prediction for who it is. In the sense that, I don't, with this show, I kind of don't care. Like, this isn't that kind of show to me. I've never felt compelled much to guess what's coming. To me, it's been a case of sit back, trust the writers, and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really, you know, that kind of makes or breaks the finale here. Like, do I want to walk away from it satisfied, I guess. Is, you know, I don't need to be shocked. I don't, you know, I don't need to, you know, be dazzled. I want to be satisfied, really. And a lot of other shows, I want that shock. I want that dazzle. I want to see how they're going to wrap everything up. I don't need everything wrapped up. I don't need a tidy little bow. I just want to be satisfied. I want it to ring true. I want to, you know, I want this to. And again, the way it rings most true. And they started doing this last week. You know, Kendall, basically his wife and kids are left the city. So, and, you know, he's, you know, obviously never sees his kids anyway. Jess, his like trusted advisor, you know, is leaving.
Yep.
He like basically, I mean, you know, he's been ready to throw his siblings, you know, into the East River from day one.
Right.
You know, then he brings Colin back in, you know, and like he kind of taps Hugo seemingly almost to be like his de facto, you know, Frank Carl type guy, like going forward, you know, for the next 30 years. So I don't know. I mean, the breadcrumbs are there for that also. That's the more satisfying ending. Seeing Kendall get what he thinks he wants, but he doesn't really want it. And at the same time, I'd love to see Shiv, who, like I say in my, you know, report there, like, you know, she maybe kind of has like a glimmer of hope about her, like that she might get out of this. You know, I don't know.
I think you're reaching with attaching any positivity to her character, but I guess you're hopeful for the unborn baby, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, you know, softens you a little bit. And you remember when we met Shiv. You know, she wasn't this striver in the business. She was, you know, working for, like, you know, a far left, you know, presidential candidate. So, I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
Mentioning Colin, that brings up the one. I think you set one soft line in your piece of will the dead waiter enter the chat?
Yeah.
Plus 500.
I gotta
say, yes. That, to me, that's more like even money. That too many people know. They keep teasing it. I'd be surprised if we got through the finale without someone using it or threatening to use it or something. I know you said you don't need everything all tidy and all wrapped up, and I would agree with that. Like, I don't need that to happen, but I do think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, there's no telling what's going to happen. It's been, I think the season has been just tremendous. I mean, every episode I feel like is almost kind of outdoing the one before it. You know, this is Jesse Armstrong's vision, and we're seeing it come to fruition. And so I am ready to buckle up on Memorial night, Sunday night, and to watch it once, possibly twice. And then I'm so happy that we have off Monday, so I don't even have to feel guilty about pretending to work while I watch Succession for a third time at like 9 o'clock in the morning.
I'm quite confident that you will indeed have seen it like five times by the time I talk to you next. But where I just you had mentioned, I guess, when the season was early in the season, I guess, sort of the this is clearly cracking your Mount Rushmore. It is all time favorite show in your sights here. If you're happy with the finale.
I don't know about all time number one favorite show, but I mean, for sure, like top 10, no brainer, no matter what happens Sunday.
I would agree with that. I think it's, yeah, I'm a, no matter how, even if they totally blow the ending, it's like bottom of my top 10 area.
Yeah. And then, like, that, you know, clearly, like, Mount Rushmore-esque on, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I think we went over this a few podcasts ago, but I don't know. Let's let the dust settle for
a year or two. Okay, that's we'll fair. I won't make you rank it all time before we've seen the finale. Never mind, even maybe in the immediate aftermath of the finale is probably too soon to decide. So, All right. We'll come back to it at some point, perhaps.
It's time to welcome a special guest from the world of gambling. Let's get to the Gamble On interview.
We are just days away from Memorial Day weekend, which means we are just days away from the Indy 500. So what better time to welcome to the podcast RotoGrinders, head of motorsports, the host of the Morning Grind podcast. You know him as Stevie TPFL. Stephen Young, welcome to Gamble On.
Eric and Jeff, thanks for having me. Yes, I don't even know if we call it like the Indy 500 weekend anymore, because like so many people have become obsessed with F1 because of the Netflix show that it's like they just call it the best like motorsport weekend of the year because of the three races.
Okay. Well, I feel even better then that we definitely picked the right week to have you on.
Yeah, good week. A lot of motorsports, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, there's been a pretty strong drumbeat that NASCAR and auto racing in general is the next big thing in sports betting. I'm wondering, do you agree with that? And what are some things that you think the sport or the industry needs to do to get people more involved?
I mean, they're doing it. Yes, I think it's going to be the next biggest sport you can, you know, get people involved in betting, because honestly, there's just so much you could bet on. You could bet on stage one. You could bet on stage two. You can live bet who you think is going to win the race. You can, I mean, at some point we might even see like live betting, like pit stops. Is this pit stop going to be under 12 seconds? So like from the start of the race to the end of the race, there's potential for the race to be bet on. And anytime you have that type of action in a 3-hour window, yeah, people are going to be involved in wanting to bet it. So I think the sport is embracing it. We've seen them embrace it, I think, a little bit more than like IndyCar and F1. And I mean, they're continuing to work with like partners on, you know, making it where they're making sure the drivers are doing what they're supposed to be doing on not like giving advice or anything like that. But they're also making sure that like there's just so much going on. So I think, yes, to answer your question, yes. Do I think it's the next big thing in sports betting? Yes, because one, there's a ton of variance, so the books are going to enjoy that kind of variance. And two, I mean, the sweat is unreal. I mean, if you are sweating a race and you could be winning 99% of the time and that last lap something happens and you lose. So I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me over the last 10 years.
Do you at least have some of the reverse? It's going horribly for you. Your guy is stuck in fourth place and then the last lap, everything breaks your way. Is there a good beat story to go with all the bad beat stories?
The first time I ever had a six-figure win, I was a rain-shortened race, and I definitely wouldn't have hit for over $100,000 had the race restarted. So I guess like I can't ever like argue or get mad about like the back end. And honestly, I've just embraced it. I've just embraced the variance of motorsports in general. And you know, there's weeks where you're just like, "What the heck?" And then there's weeks like, "Man, I just absolutely nailed this race," and we move on to the next one.
You know, this week obviously is the Indy 500. I'm an outsider to all this, but it seems like there's not as much appeal to the IndyCar circuit compared to NASCAR. I feel like NASCAR like is on, you know, it's on the common fan sports radar. Do you have any thoughts as to why NASCAR has like kind of leapt over the IndyCar scene? And as a result of that, do you see any betting edges in the Indy series?
Betting the Indy 500, in my opinion, is tough because it's one of the races that anyone can win. Because of how much pit strategy and, you know, just how a caution could just absolutely change the whole race. I mean, if we look back to even last year's race, like Erickson was fast last year. But I mean, he wasn't like race winning speed type of fast. So, it just IndyCar, there's been some guys and teams really that have just done so well over the years that, I mean, they've gotten the strategy of the Indy 500, right. And I mean, it's down to a science when to pit and when not to pit. But I think going back to the conversation we just had of like how NASCAR really has embraced it, where, I mean, if you go on like, just for instance, you go on the IndyCar website, it's so hard to find anything about like sports betting. NASCAR has a whole like Action Network like NASCAR page for sports betting on their thing. So they've just, I feel like why they haven't caught on as much for IndyCar or F1 is just NASCAR has embraced it faster. I don't want to say that IndyCar is not going to, but I think they've just embraced it faster.
So let's say, Steve, that I'm a guy who has never bet on auto racing before and rarely watches racing. Let's say that because it's true. How could I approach betting on the Indy 500 in a way that's going to make it fun for me and get me engaged and make me want to watch the whole race? I'm not necessarily looking for like handicapping and picks and who should I bet, but just what sort of markets should I be looking at that are going to make this a fun experience for me?
I think just outright betting would probably be the best like sweat for you. If you're like a new person, it like, I think that goes for not just like F1, not as much. I think F1 is like one of the most predictable forms of motorsports that we have for like who's going to win each week. Mm-hmm. And that's typically why in a 20 car field, the favorite is like a minus 180, where in NASCAR, you don't necessarily see somebody get, you know, better than like 3-1. So I think just outright betting in NASCAR and IndyCar is like, if you're a new bettor, it's just fun. That's the sweat. There's a lot that you can bet from. The race winner has started inside the top five in five of the last six Indy 500s. So looking at trends like that, that actually makes sense when it comes to strategy. And, you know, there's ways that you could do it, but trying to find that underdog and betting the underdog is always fun. But the Indy 500 for me is one that I'm like, if you're a new bettor, pump the brakes a little bit. Don't get into, hey, I'm going to bet this guy for 10 units because everybody's talking about him kind of thing. So, and then for NASCAR, like a new bettor for NASCAR, I mean, they have top 10 markets where we typically get really good odds on one or two drivers that is just mispriced early in the week that you can kind of get on. So, yeah, I mean, just outright betting, I think, gives you the best sweat, best bang for your buck. You know, you don't feel like too invested in the sport, and you can really kind of sweat the whole thing unless your guy wrecks really early.
So maybe outright betting, but where I pick two or three different, yeah, mid-range shots to bet on so that I'm up my chances of having one of them in the hunt at the end.
Yeah, there's always like, especially like with NASCAR, for instance, I know NASCAR betting way more than I know Indy betting. Mm-hmm. So for NASCAR, there's typically like one or two drivers that'd be in that like 8-1, 10-1 range. So you could bet a couple of those guys and return like 4 or 5 units if you win, instead of like betting one guy to win the F1 race at like minus 180. And if he loses, you're just not making any units back. So I think betting outright gives you a little bit more wide range. And then I think it depends on the track too. Like when you're in a Daytona or a Talladega type of racetrack, a guy from 25th can win, and that gets the odds a lot higher, and you can have a lot of fun with that too.
All right, let's talk. Get back your bread and butter here. The back to NASCAR. Coca-Cola 600 this week. You've been running hot so far this year, especially in DFS. My own bankroll proves it because I just basically tail what you're doing as best I can. So let's give some little free picks, a little free advice. Who do you like this week?
Hendrick and JGR. The Toyotas and the Hendrick Chevys have been really strong on 1.5s to start the year. We saw really the Hendrick cars really fast early on in the year at Vegas, and then Kansas was about a month and a half later, and we saw the JGR Toyotas really kind of catch up in speed. The Fords are really struggling right now just to find speed on this type of racetrack, so I'm kind of off the Fords in general. So a Kyle Larson, a William Byron, a Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Christopher Bell type plays, I think are the ones you're looking at here early in the week.
I'm in. That's it. I'm done. You know, one last thing before we let you go. You're also the host of the Morning Grind for Roto Grinders, where, you know, 5 days a week, you know, Monday through Friday, you wake up and the day's DFS is out there for you, whether it be during baseball season, basketball season, as well as the NFL season. So that's really, you know, that's a 365, you know, 52 week job, you know, and despite myself being a daily player of all these sports, you know, I don't think I've missed a day since I started doing this stuff. The idea of having to put the show together every day, especially at the end of the day, seems a little grindy, you know, to you know, in the Morning Grind parlance. I'm just curious, what is your process of doing that show every day? I mean, and if you ever get tired of it, just let me know. I'll fill in once in a while for you. I'm doing the research anyway.
I think we nailed the name of it when we came up with it. And we came up with it in 2016. I've been doing it, you know, 5 days a week since 2016. We're well over 1500 episodes. I mean, I think it's just second nature now. Like, yeah. I don't really know how to get into it. I mean, I spend about an hour looking at the slate before the podcast, and I, you know, write some stuff down, and then it all just comes naturally. I know I have my links, I have my tabs on, you know, PlateIQ and stuff like that on RotoGrinders, where I just kind of know what I'm looking at, especially with baseball. Baseball, it flows really well. I know baseball like the back of my hand, so just knowing what to look at, it makes the show flow really good. So basketball is probably the hardest and the biggest grind because, I mean, you get the injury news throughout the day and it changes stuff. So, like, basketball is like a legit first look podcast, where yeah. Baseball, I mean, I built a lineup yesterday, and I didn't change it. So, and, you know, it ended up finishing, you know, top half of a tournament. So it's just, honestly, it's a grind. Yes. The schedule. The one thing that I'll say is I have an all-star wife, man. She's great. And I, you know, that gets lost in the shuffle from time to time when it comes to this job, but she supports me and we have just kind of worked out a schedule and it just works. And then, I mean, 7+ years now, and yeah, it's a grind, but it's fun. And I enjoy you get those messages from time to time, like, hey, you helped me win $100,000 and you changed my life. And like, those are just the messages that fuel you to keep going, and you know, it just never gets old.
Excellent, man. Yeah, I mean, I'm a daily listener. I wake up with them. I have a nice wife too. She doesn't yell at me too much in the morning to take my earbuds out, so it works out fine. Steven, thanks so much for jumping on. I'm his guest now. I'm on the couch.
Thanks for doing this, Steven. Great talking to you.
No problem. Have a good one, guys.
Two men. $10,000. Will they run it up or blow it all? It's time to check in on the Gamble On Bankroll.
Let's update our betting bankroll, and it was another not great week, but we do have one lingering bet that maybe will begin to reverse our fortunes. We'll see. First, though, the bets that are graded. Several weeks ago, I threw $25 on LeBron for Finals MVP at 27-1. That's dead. Last week, I thought about betting on a Jokic triple-double in Game 2 to win $100, and it would have won. He went 23-17-12. Instead, I did points betting on points times rebounds times assists over 48-39 at 25 cents a point. He was cruising toward a big over through three quarters and then put up almost no stats in the fourth, and we end up at 46-92, slightly under. We lost $37. Jeff, you made four ladder bets on Yuri Perez and his strikeouts last Thursday afternoon. Over 4.5 hit, over 5.5 hit, over 6.5 didn't hit, and over 7.5 didn't hit. He was doing great, but they pulled him after just 78 pitches in five innings. Still, we won $81 on that. My boxing bet was a loser. I was sure Katie Taylor wouldn't lose a close decision in Dublin, but she lost a close decision in Dublin. We dropped $110 on that. And lastly, we've fallen to 0-for-2 on Triple Crown betting. We took a shot on Chase the Chaos at 50-1. The horse finished fifth in the Preakness. Oh, well, cost us $50. We do have assorted futures bets out there. Spencer Strider for Cy Young at 10-1 is promising. You have that one. Marlins under 76.5 wins continues to be a good sweat. They, of course, set an MLB record by winning their first 12 one-run games. Just a ridiculous streak of luck to give them a 500 record, despite the second worst run differential in the NL. Really hoping variance bends our way on that one. But the most intriguing and immediate one for now was the $50 bet at 10-1 last week on the Heat to beat the Celtics in six. We need Boston to win tonight and Miami to then close it out at home to win $500. And I'll have more to say about that in just a sec. But for now, we lost $141 last week. We're now down by $2,992. We also have $11.25 on hold in futures bets, and that leaves us with $58.83 available to bet with this week. And I'm up first, so here goes. Celtics Heat, Game 5, tonight in Boston. The Celtics are favored by 8 or 8.5, depending on the book. I think that overestimates the Celtics, as the lines generally have this whole series, but we do, for bankroll purposes, need Boston to win tonight. So we have us a quasi-hedge opportunity where we can also middle and win it all, in addition to kind of hedging, at Caesars. Heat plus 8.5 has a nice minus 105 price. I like that bet on its own. I think it's the right side of this game. If the Heat win the game, well, we lose the Heat in six bet, but we win this one. If the Celtics win this game by a lot, we lose this bet, but we're about 50-50 to score the 10-1 win in game six. And if the Celtics win by eight or less, we win this bet and we're 50-50 to win the other one. So $105 to win 100, Heat plus 8.5 tonight.
I like it. Good one. I like it. This series is very interesting. I mean, you see the Celtics are only like plus 220 or something to win the whole series. It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. I got another bet for tonight also. Let's go Derek White over 12.5 points. He started the last two games. I would expect that he's going to start tonight. Mm-hmm. He's gotten off 9 and 10 shots the last two games. It's been working-ish, I guess. I don't know. 12.5 points for Derek White. If he's going to get the minutes, why not? Let's go $100, even odds.
Okay. So I'm doing another NBA bet. I am jumping now on Nikola Jokic for finals MVP. The best price I'm seeing is minus 170 at points bet. I'm fairly confident the Nuggets are winning this thing, whether against an increasingly banged up Heat team or against a sloppy Celtics team that would be coming off a miraculous but exhausting 0-3 comeback win if they get there. Denver is the better team, clearly, in either matchup, and they've been unbeatable at home all postseason. And yeah, Jamal Murray is capable of occasional huge games, but if the Nuggets win the title, I'd say it's at least about 90% certain Jokic is the MVP, because whatever else happens, he's going to get his numbers. He's averaging 30, 13, and 10 this postseason. Even if those numbers come down a little in the finals, let's say he goes 26, 12, and 9. He's going to be the MVP if the Nuggets win, even if Murray averages 30 points or something. And the handful of reporters who will be voting on the MVP are feeling guilt over denying Jokic the MVP award for the season. I mean, it is a regular season award. I think it was correct to give it to Embiid, but the narrative all postseason has been, we screwed up. Jokic is the best player in the world right now. So they're going to give him finals MVP if it's a close call. So $170 to win 100, Jokic for NBA finals MVP. I like that better than just betting on the Nuggets to win the title at minus 210.
All right. Very nice. I was one for one with this one a few weeks ago, so I'm going to bring it back. It's a Roto Grinders Weather Edge special.
Okay.
Over 9.5 in today's Padres Nationals game. Again, based on historical data, runs get scored, home runs get hit in the weather today down in D.C. Blake Snell is capable of blowing up at any time. The Nationals are pitching somebody, supposedly. So those two things plus the weather, I'll take the over 9.5 at $100. Again, even odds.
Yeah, even money again. Okay. Who are you and what have you done with Jeff Edelstein? So far, we have two simple one-leg even money bets. What's going on? I'm nervous about the one that awaits.
No, don't be. It's pretty normal-ish.
Okay. Normal-ish. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll leave that tease to linger for a second while I go through my final bets here on boxing. Even though my boxing bets haven't been great lately, I keep landing on the wrong side of close or debatable decisions. I'm going to keep trying. I have two here this Saturday, again in Ireland. This time I'll bet against the local fighter. I think Luis Alberto Lopez should be a slight favorite over Michael Conlan in what should be an outstanding fight, but he's a slight underdog. He's plus 105 at Foxbet. So pretty straightforward stuff. If I think a guy is about 55% likely to win and I can get plus 105 on him, got to bet it every time. So $100 to win 105 there. And then the mega fight for the pound for pound throne. Welterweight Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence. The best fight in terms of the quality of the two competitors that really can be made in the entire sport. And the rumors are that it's almost ready to be officially announced for July 29th in Vegas. And FanDuel still has it dead even, minus 112 each way. And I've felt all along that Crawford's the better fighter and should be the small favorite. So let's put out a little bet on it now. This is in the two-way market. We get our money back if it's a draw. 112 to win 100 on Terrence Bud Crawford. And, of course, voided if the fight doesn't end up getting officially signed. But all indications are that it's on. Terrence Crawford is even selling T-shirts for it on his website. Really ugly T-shirts, which is a discussion for another time. But there you go. 112 to win 100 on Terrence Crawford.
All right. Last up for me, home run call. Nolan Arenado today in Cincinnati going up against Luke Weaver, plus 370 at DraftKings. I don't think Arenado should never be even that high to begin with, especially not against Luke Weaver, especially not in Cincinnati. $100 to win, to take home 470.
All right. Yeah, you're right. Pretty straightforward. I mean,
it
was a decent plus money, which is a little more in keeping with the Jeff MO. But yeah, not a single parlay this week.
Just wait. I'm waiting for the NFL season. I'm really thinking of, you know, I always do that NFL column. I'm thinking of introducing like a second NFL column, just titling it here's five stupid parlays I like.
Well, who wouldn't want to read that?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Basically, here's a column you can read every week and promptly ignore, because even the guy writing it thinks that what he's terrible telling bets. You is stupid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all these big parlay bets are stupid bets, but they're fun. They are fun.
Right. And okay. So can we call it here are five fun parlays this week instead of advertising it as stupid?
Sure.
All right. Yeah. We'll work on it. We'll workshop it.
Because seriously, though, you know, there's all this talk, you know, a lot of like big names in the industry, like, oh, the parlays. Listen, man, for the average, like, you know, Joe Schmo better like myself, it's a lot more fun to bet $5, you know, on some stupid parlay, you know, hoping to win 100, 200 bucks than it is to bet 100 bucks on Derek White scoring 12 and a half points. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's it.
All right. While we still have the chance here, do you want to take Derek White over 12 and a half points, over 9.5 in Padres Nats and an Arenado homer and parlay them all together?
I mean, let's just throw 10 bucks on it.
we'll price it out afterwards.
We'll price it out. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm adding that to the list. All right. Good. I'm glad we were able to make this episode a little more fun and a little more stupid at the last second there. And that'll do it for this episode of Gamble On. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. And thanks again to this week's guest, Stevie Young. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Raskin and Jeff at Jeff Edelstein, and follow US Bets at US_bets. Go to usbets.com for all the latest news and analysis from the world of gambling, and subscribe to this podcast on Megaphone, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else. And with that, Jeff, please take us out.
Yeah, I'm fucking old, Eric. the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue this year, they had four different covers. One had Megan Fox. Okay. Another had Brooks Nader as a model. Okay, great. Another had Kim Petras, I think if I'm pronouncing her name right, who's transgendered. And that pissed some people off, but, you know, whatever. I don't care. She's the one who did that Unholy song with Sam Smith. I mean, you could knock me over with a feather for me to find out that she was born or male. Well, whatever. Who cares? I don't care. It's the last cover model, Martha Stewart. That's the one that threw me for a loop. I mean, Eric, she's 81. She's 81 years old. That's too old to be a Sports Illustrated swimsuit cover girl. We need a 20-year-old model on the cover like they always used to do. Remember Polina Poroskova, that 1985 edition? Eric, it's burned into my brain. I'm not even kidding you. But then, Eric, this is where things go off the rails, because I started doing some math, all right? I am as close in age to Martha Stewart as I am to a garden variety 20-year-old model. That is fucked up, okay?
Yeah.
Then I took it one step further / much, much worse. My son is 14 years old, meaning that there are women out there right now who are 33 years old. These are women with jobs, marriages, kids, full-blown 100% freaking adults who are closer in age to my son than they are to me. I am now going to go scream Gamble On into a pillow.